Welcome to Inside Out, The Naked Truth.
Coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in Los Gatos Hills of California, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked.
I am Michelle Alicia Strider.
And I am Errol Strider. And we're just delighted to be able to be with you tonight and share this evening with you. And just remind you, the purpose of Inside Out, The Naked Truth, is to help us enlighten our lives by getting to the core of any issue that concerns you. Issues that frustrate you, confuse you, bug you, disturb you, titillate you, or just that boggle the mind. Hence, The Naked Truth.
And we explore that truth through conscious conversation, humor, music, skits, poetry, and your comments.
Our show is brought to you by Go Rye, Go Raw. And they're based right here in San Jose, and you can find them in the organic section of Costco and at Whole Foods, and they make just, what? Tell us about it.
Oh, Go Raw is 100% natural organic raw food that not only tastes good, but is good for you. And to find out more about Go Raw, go to goraw.com. See all their products. They have cookies, snacks, bars, chocolate, and seeds, and it is delicious.
Yummy and good for you. And that's kind of what we hope our show is for you all tonight, is yummy and, well, good for you. And tonight our theme is how far will self-interest get you? I remember reading a book by the political candidate, Bradley, thank you. He wrote what I thought was a fabulous book about America and improving on it, et cetera. And he had this line in the book towards the end of the book after he had come up with these whole wonderful ways of making things improve. And he said, we can do this, you know, if it just weren't for fear, greed, and self-interest, essentially. And ignorance. That was the other one, ignorance. And so there we have it. We have self-interest, and it's probably our most coveted, cherished interest is ourselves. Doesn't get much more personal than that. But I think it behooves us to actually go in and see what we're really talking about and what drives self-interest and what is it and how do we get from here to there? And is there a certain point in which self-interest, as we understand it, is just no longer useful? What do you think, Michelle? What do you got?
Well, I think how far will self-interest get you is pretty far, but not far enough on our ever-evolving planet. I mean, if we think of evolution as moving from totally self-centered exclusivity to becoming more and more inclusive, we are pretty much beginners on an evolutionary perspective. Of course, we're still examining our toes and fingers in awe that we exist and what we get from mom and dad and everyone else who thinks we're adorable. As we evolve, of course, we become conscious of others. They too have feelings. They too have needs, some of which we can meet. The self has now grown to include others. Self-interest gets our needs met, sometimes at the expense of others, and leads to greed, selfishness. Our reptilian brain is constantly active, watching our back to make sure we get ours and no one else gets ours. As we mature, of course, sharing becomes a possibility. Our needs still get met, but we care for others. It's a win-win situation that is able to take place. Self-interest is an important first step in our growth, sort of like crawling. So how far does it take us? It takes us to the next step, the interest of others as well as ourselves. That's how I see it.
Or, this is the insight that I've had, it's been creeping up on me during the latter part of my life, and that is that who is the self? And remember when Moses went up to the mountain and asked God, you know, who are you? And
did he ask him, who are you?
Yeah, you know, well, he actually said, what's with God? What's with you, God?
Just remember, this show tends to be irreverent, so if you want reverence, don't listen to us.
Well, we revere the naked truth, and that's why we go after it. And somehow this process that we go through between us, delving into these issues, reveals it. And so back to the soul, though, or the self. Who is the self? So Moses was up at the mountain, and he asked God, who are you? And God, being a God of sometimes a few words, said, he said, I am that I am. And what a curious statement that is when you think about it. I mean, we've had all these God words and all these different religions trying to understand God. And then you walk up to the presence, for lack of a better word, it's actually a good word, and he says, I am that I am. Now, one way that I interpreted that, if I'm standing there and I'm Moses, and the God says, I am, what he's saying, and remember, he was a fire, and what he's actually saying was, I am, and then with a poke of a fire, flame, like a finger, he pointed to Moses, and he says, I am that I am. And you can almost see Moses going, moi? And they didn't say if he repeated it or not, but I suspect that he's going, that I am. And what that has come to mean to me, which is so juicy and delicious, is when you think about the self that you feel yourself to be, that I am self. Okay, listeners, you're all right there, aware and inside yourself and taking in information. But you're very aware of yourself. You're aware of yourself all day long. And yet,
that's what gets you into trouble.
There you go. And we're going to do a little sketch in a few minutes to show you just how that works. But it's the very I am-ness that we sense ourselves to be is shared with the first, shall we say, I am. So what I've come to, Rochelle's looking at me with this kind of like, huh? It's hard to explain, but when you think about your I am, that's actually all I am. Everything is I am. We're all that I am.
Right. And it's so all. The allness is so replete that it defies definition. And so if the self defies definition, then that's a whole different way of looking at the self, because we're constantly limited by our definitions. I am this, I am that, I am this, that, I am that. But I am that I am is so, what's the word? It's abstract. It's not, you can't pin it down to an image. It's imageless.
Well, it's you. And I think that brings us back to our question, the self, who is the self and interest in the self. And at a certain point, we spend much of our life trying to identify this self in many different ways. And
I think we try to identify the self the way a baby tries to discover themselves through their toes and their fingers. You know, you watch children really discovering the self, you know, the corporeal self, the physical self, and in some totally unintellectual but kinetic way, one starts to have a definition of self, and then the definition moves from physical to emotional. You know, that the self has needs, then the self has thoughts, and then the self identifies with the thoughts and ideas. And what I hear you say when you say I am that I am, it's beyond that. It's beyond the physical. It's beyond the emotional. It's beyond the intellect. We're more than that. But at this stage of our development, I don't think we can even comprehend that.
You know, we haven't done this yet on this show, but I want to just talk to posterity for a minute, because maybe posterity, you will have moved to that stage of awareness where you really grok. Remember that image from Robert Heinlein and the book where you kind of fully grasp that very sense. But I want to go back and look at what actually gets in the way. What do we struggle with? And for that, we're going to do a sketch. And it's called The Meeting. And I was inspired to write it by a line from I and Thou by Martin Buber, the great Jewish philosopher. And he said, all real living is meeting. All real living is meeting. So what we're going to try and do with this sketch, and I hope you'll imagine it in a, as laughable a way as you can, because it's designed to be a funny sketch, sort of, as well as a probing one.
And let's give you some a sense of what's taking place. There's two characters on the stage. One character is going through a lot of bottle caps and things like that, and counting stuff. And the other character is on the stage. They're dressed sort of like bums, you know, kind of mismatched clothes and big fat shoes and funny hats. And the character is washing herself with a cloth and a bottle of spray water at this moment.
And now the curtain rises. And as she comes up into his space, he says, is this your space? Am I bothering you?
Excuse me.
What are you doing?
I'm living.
He looks at her and sees that she's actually spraying her underarms with the spray bottle. And he says to her, this is living?
Yeah. What about you?
Well, I'm not sure I'm living.
Why not?
Well.
Hey, you're alive, aren't you?
I guess so.
A guessing counts, so you're living then.
Maybe, but I'm miserable.
Oh, you may be miserable, but that doesn't mean you're not living. Look at me. I'm miserable, but I'm still alive.
Yeah, wait a minute. Are you alive if you're miserable?
Well, that should be obvious.
How is that?
Well, I'm functioning, breathing, moving, standing up, sitting down, peeing, pooping.
That's real living?
What do you mean real living? It's living.
Yeah, but I want real living, something more than standing up and sitting down and peeing and pooping.
Did you ever try meeting?
Meeting?
You know, coming together, meeting.
You mean like mingling?
No, meeting.
Well, what's meeting?
It's being really together.
Together? For real? I could not do that, not to any great extent, that is. But if you're talking about body sharing, that's all right. That's a different matter. Is that what you're talking about? The old body sharing?
Body sharing?
Yeah, you know, the top and bottom, in and out, doody-doo, that sort of thing.
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
Why not? Ain't that meeting?
Well, it's a sort of meeting, but after you're through, you just go back to being miserable, don't you?
Yeah, always hated that part.
So why not try meeting?
Meeting? What'd you say it was again?
It has something to do with being connected with the person you're with.
Connected? Actually connected? Oh, that's awful. I couldn't do that.
Why not?
Why not? If I were, like, joined with somebody, you couldn't tell where I left off and they started up. You could not tell which of us was me.
Oh, let me get this right. In order to know that you're you, you have to make sure you stay separate from everybody else?
You bet your life. So you know what I do? I make sure there's plenty of space and stuff between me and everybody. I got barriers. They're nice invisible barriers. But nobody gets across. That way, I'm over here, they're over there. They leave me alone, I leave them alone. And if the invisible barriers don't work, well, then I make them very visible so they don't miss my point. You get my point?
Oh, yeah, I get your point.
And if someone starts to get too close, you know what I do?
No.
I shame them or blame them. I compare myself to them, and it don't matter if they're better or worse than me. It works either way, as long as I can judge them, because if I judge them, I'm separate from them. Well, I feel safe.
Uh-huh, but you're miserable.
Wait a minute. Yeah, but I may be miserable. Wait a minute.
You want to stay separate from everybody else all the time, huh?
Well.
Now, you see, you thought I was miserable, but I may be miserable, but I'm happy about it.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't bother me. You see, you don't see me putting up those barriers. I mean, you're so busy erecting barriers, you can't even be thinking of yourself. You're only thinking of your barriers. So you're liable to forget even you exist and only think your barriers exist.
Hey, wait a minute. I got the answer for that.
Yeah, what's that?
I carry a mirror with me all the time.
A mirror?
Yeah, that's how I know I exist. You see, if I'm tempted to look at something else, which, by the way, doesn't happen very often, you know, I mean, consider life from their perspective. Yeah, I look in the mirror or do something that makes me think of me. And when I think of me, I'm reminded that I exist. But if I were to focus on another person too much, forget that.
That's crazy.
That may be crazy, but it's normal.
Well, it may be normal, but it ain't living.
Well, what else is there?
There's meeting.
Ugh,
just a minute. Just a minute. What if you drop your barriers?
Drop my barriers? Then it'd be like nothing between us.
Uh-huh.
How would I know I exist?
By the others.
What others?
All the people you'd be able to think about when you weren't thinking of you.
I don't want to be thinking of others. I want to be thinking of me.
That's why you're lonely. Look, if we were all thinking of each other, what would happen?
You mean if you were thinking of me and I was thinking of you?
Yeah.
I don't want to think about it.
But if I'm seeing you and you're seeing what I'm seeing, what would you see?
Do that again.
If I'm seeing you and you're seeing what I'm seeing, what would you see?
Me?
That's how you know you're there.
Wait, you mean if I was seeing what you were seeing, I'd be seeing me through you? That'd
that's
be so cool.
Right, that's right. You want to try it?
Oh, it's a little scary.
You want to stay separate or you want to be alive?
Is that like your money, your life?
Oh, you'd rather be lonely and miserable. Because I believe that you believe by dropping the barriers and falling into somebody else, you're going to die.
Well, all right.
No, it's like falling in love, only better.
Better. What makes it better?
Because it don't quit and it feels good.
As good as in and out?
Better than in and out.
Better than in and out.
Yeah, because it lasts longer.
Lasts longer? Well, how much longer?
As long as it takes.
Oh, my goodness.
Hmm. Want to know how it works?
Okay, yeah.
You've got to drop one of your barriers.
Which barrier?
The scary one.
How do I do that?
Well, think about me and what I'm thinking about.
And what's that?
You. Are you scared?
No, I'm nothing to be afraid of. But what about you? Aren't you scary?
Oh, no, no, I'm nothing to be scared of either. I'm Rosie.
Oh, okay. Rosie, all right. So, are we meeting?
Well, not quite. Come on, look me in the eye. Mm-hmm. Look me in the eye. Are you scared?
No, I'm Charlie.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
And I'm here too. It's good to meet you, Charlie.
And it's good to meet you too, Rosie.
By the way, Charlie, when we are meeting, we don't have to leave the in and out of the house.
No? You mean we can leave the in and out in?
Yeah. When you take the barriers down, you can have the in and out, the up and down, and everything in between.
The whole enchilada? Whoa, I like that. Hey, now that's real living.
Like I told you, Charlie, all real living is me. You know, I really did get a greater insight into that thing about self-interest and why it plays such an important part in our immature lives, because there really is this terror that if we really join with another, we cease to exist. And I mean, that is the bottom line, you know, that we cease to exist.
I couldn't agree with you more or less, but before we do that, more or less.
I think that, you know, so many people, they come together, they fall in love, they have relationships, and they don't make a commitment to be together. Because the next step beyond the attraction and all that stuff is really joining.
Well, before we go any further, I want to remind our listeners that you can call in. This is Inside Out, The Naked Truth. We are Errol and Rochelle Strider. We've been exploring this
naked truth business ever since we were first naked, I think.
Yeah, even when we started wearing clothes, we felt we had to get naked.
Right, or we had to get naked. And so, and the other thing is we're living at Lupin Lodge, which is a clothing optional resort, 110 beautiful acres, where often as not, you'll find people enjoying just the freedom of being able to be naked. And I think being able to be physically naked for many is a beginning on the road to self-acceptance. That's for one thing. And another thing is to start raising consciousness about how you feel about yourself and your body, which includes wanting to take better care of it, which brings me to our sponsor, Go Raw, real live food. And it's just terrific stuff. I went out and visited their plant recently, and where they're sprouting seeds, and those seeds were like so sprouty. I loved it. I could hear them sprouting at me, saying, "We want inside you." Anyway, goraw.com. So we're looking at the subject tonight, and what's the call-in number, Rochelle? You've got
the call-in number is 888-627-6008, and I'm going to say it again, just because. 888-627-6008. That was fun.
That was good. For some reason, that reminded me when I was a cheerleader. I'm trying to think, the way you were gesturing. I was a cheerleader at the University of Missouri for 2 years, and I had this girlfriend. I always thought this was an amusing story. Her name was Jane, and I'm down on the field, of course, leading the fans and the cheers, and after the game, Jane came up to me, and she was telling me about this guy who was sitting in front of her who was really drunk, not an uncommon thing at football games, really obnoxious. And Jane, who's this very petite, beautiful little girl, kind of like my wife, actually, said that at the end of the game, she had a full bottle of Coke and ice, and she poured it on his head.
She was being loyal to you, huh?
Well, I don't know, but when I think of Jane or someone like you pouring it on someone's head, I just always found that very enduring and amusing. And
it's really interesting that sense of, to me, that's an expansion right away of self. You know, when you look at somebody and you see that they are doing this thing and somebody being upset with who you perceive is them, that you want to protect them or you're on their side, right away, it seems to me that's an expanded version of yourself. And it's not just about you, but now somebody's become part of you. And so you try to take care of them in the same way that you were before taking care of yourself and still taking care of yourself. But so you have that beautiful poem I love so much. It's like, you know,
which one?
Two or more.
Oh.
Do you remember?
When I join with another, myself drives forward like the hard, earnest thrust of love's embrace. When I enter love, I come to know myself. For in the eyes of my beloved, whether man, woman, child, or God, I see my soul enhanced. And as my soul beams back to me, it brings with it another. And myself is that much bigger for allowing two inside it. Well, let's just take a little break now, and something we haven't done, we're going to share with you on this show, but we have, we have more than just one sponsor besides Go Raw. We have another sponsor, and now we'd like to hear a word from that sponsor. Friends, if you're tired of the same old moments, if one moment starts to look just like the next, if you've had the same dilapidated thoughts every day, they feel tired, worn down, and boring, if your life is practically a cliché, if you find that you can finish every sentence you start, then try new and improved this moment. New and improved this moment is like no moment you've ever had before. Gone will be those haggard, overused, repetitive thoughts. Gone will be those regrets, complaints, shouldas, couldas, and wouldas. New and improved this moment will keep them at bay eternally. They simply cannot invade your space. By applying new and improved this moment right away, you are immediately logged onto eternity, and that comes with ubiquity right along with it. That's right. New and improved this moment is your sure and only access to endless time and space. And once you're there, an unlimited number of creative options will open up for you. All you have to do is drop into new and improved this moment. So, if you've ever dropped out, dropped acid, or dropped a line, you'll know that what it is like to drop into new and improved this moment. You'll love it.
Hey, Errol, where can I get new and improved this moment right now?
Where you can get it? Well, let's talk about that in terms of the self and the past and future. That's a big part of self-interest. You know, a lot of self-interest is trying to gather things to ward off a bad future and to make the future a good place. And so here we are actually living in this moment right now, but we're constantly referencing the past in terms of what we've learned from it, right or wrong, good or bad, effective or not so effective, or in order to mitigate the negative possibilities of the future. And not least of which is planning, so we can be here on time to run this radio show. But I want to go to a kind of deeper level where we get underneath the just making plans for the future, but how we actually try and preserve ourselves by trying to control the future and holding on to the past. And I believe that the holding on to the past is precisely where and why the need for forgiveness in our lives come in. It's like, to the degree that in our past we have been abused or wounded, and those moments didn't get resolved to our favor, we hold on to them.
And I just have this image of holding on to the past and reaching out to the future that's been stretched by two horses going in different directions, which immediately makes your present very uncomfortable.
Well, it does. I think that's a great way of understanding why we become addicted and compulsive. The present, because we're being pulled in these two directions all the time, becomes so uncomfortable that we have to eat something or screw something or buy something or in some other way try and resolve this tension within us. And so
what I'm discovering so much in my own life is that as I drop into the present, I mean, drop in the sense that I'm just here. You know, I show up. Remember our family motto, show up, pay attention, stay in touch. You know, when I show up, I'm here, and I don't dwell on what brought me. It's like dwelling on the stagecoach when you get out, you know, in front of the hotel.
Right.
Here at the hotel, you're not thinking about the stagecoach anymore. You're there. And what took me here, and I'm grateful for it, but here I am. And here I am, you know, with you in this moment, you know, doing this radio show, and all these ideas that are being brought to the forefront of my consciousness and shared with you and our listening audience happen in this now. And they brought, the past brought me here, and as I share this now, it soon becomes the future, and I don't have to worry about it because the future will always be the now.
The future's already the now when
That's
you get
right.
there.
That's what I'm saying. Right. It's right. Always the now.
Isn't that something? No matter when and where you get to your future, when you get there, it'll be more of this nowness. What's with that?
I like it. I also like the fact that in that nowness, I get to be the me that I am, because there's no Because there's no problem with that.
You know, I think that's true, and I think that's really what we really want, isn't it? To be the me that we are.
I have to say something. Errol works a lot on picking the music for this show. He picks the music to complement what we're talking about, like this.
Hello again. This is Errol.
And this is Rochelle. We're back on the air. It seems like we had a little glitch, and we were playing a song called It's Got to Be Me. I've Got to Be Me, which was recorded by Buddy Holiday.
Holly.
Buddy Holiday.
And the Crickets.
Buddy Holly and the Crickets, that's right. It's quite fun, but I'm afraid now to play it because it seems to have knocked us off the air. So here we are, talking about I've got to be me, you know. There's this place where the me becomes an expanded being, too.
Well, I'm talking with our engineer, Don, back there at the site up in Paradise, and he said maybe we can try this song again. So let's do it and let us know if it doesn't come through, because it's worth hearing at least some of it.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess it just doesn't work. Well, we'll have to figure that out on another occasion. So let's get back to our study. Speaking of self-interest, my self-interest at that moment was to be able to share this with you. So I'm going through kind of a disappointment, and yet this is what happens, you know. Shit happens. I just did a little. I got a little doo-doo on myself. But let's move on. Let's get back to yourself. Where have you encountered most challenge in terms of self-interest bubbling up against, let's say, a more enlarged possibility, Rochelle?
For me, it's like if I feel judged, you know, if I feel judged and less by anybody, you know, they look at me and they make me less in their eyes, I have a hard time with that. I mean, I have a better time than I've ever had because I get over it a little bit faster. But there's this sense of diminishment that I'm less than what I think I am, and I get very frightened. And what I've become aware of is it's that fear of being less is sort of like the erosion of self. And if I know myself a certain way and I feel that self-image that I have is being eroded, it's a death. And so we're all scared of dying because we don't know what it truly is on the other side of death, if there's anything. And the nothingness is really scary because we think of ourselves as something. And so we don't want to be nothing. But when I feel in any way judged, that sense of nothingness creeps in. Tiny little slivers of it. Like we had a patio window once, and all of a sudden it began to shatter. It just shattered. It was like hundreds and hundreds of shattered pieces all through it, and then it collapsed. But before it collapsed, there were all these slivers running through the glass, and I think that's how I feel when I feel judged, you know, these slivers running through my sense of myself, which may lead to a total collapse.
Okay, well, you know, we're just having a little musical problem tonight. Don't know what that's about. So let's get back to our we were talking about being scattered, having your image scattered, and life will break you apart, won't it? And then there you are, all over the place. Remember those little, in that movie Terminator, and how the silver used to go all over the place? Remember the character that he would break apart? The Terminator?
Turn into like the Mercury?
Yeah, yeah, Mercury all over the place. And so there we are, all over the place, scattered, smooshed.
We put together this show, and Errol spent a great deal of time with music to complement it. And some of it, as my kids might say, it's cheesy, but nevertheless, it speaks about what we're speaking about in a different form. And tonight we haven't been able to get the music to play, which is kind of frustrating. I can see frustration lines on Errol's forehead.
Forming as we speak.
Which his image of himself as putting it together as well as possible has been totally shattered. And that's just the way it is sometimes, boys and girls. I mean, it doesn't always turn out the way you want it to. I remember the first time I made a souffle, and I kept telling you, not to open the oven door, not to look at it, very careful not to expose it to cold air because it will just fall down. And I tried to do it right, open the oven door, of course, too soon because I was impatient and wanted to see it, and it did fall flat out of its little souffle face.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because recently I found out that in a previous life, I was a souffle.
I knew that about you. I had this one epiphanous moment where I said, Errol, souffle. That's who he was. Chocolate souffle. That's probably why you don't like that.
Well, I see that, because what is a souffle? It's a something that's really basically nothing, all puffed up with air. And then you throw some light and air and fresh air, and you take it out of the oven, and it just gets squished down into this tiny little self. Matter of fact, I had an insight once that the ego expands you by puffing you up with fear. Whereas God, just to use that metaphor, God expands you by filling you up with love.
Well, I like that.
Okay. And
but I think a good souffle is not just puffed up. It's taking like an egg white that you beat so much that you beat air into the egg white, and then if you keep it just right, that air becomes delicious. So there's that part of it, a souffle, not just when it falls, but when it's right. It's so yummy to eat because it's light on your tongue. It's not heavy in your body.
What's your call number? Maybe we can get some people to call.
888-627-6008. Once again, 888-627-6008. You give us a call right now. Maybe you can sing something to us so we can hear some music.
That is possible. Well, so if you don't want to hear this poem, then call in. Otherwise, I'm going to share a poem that I wrote that I feel really kind of addresses this issue. And it's called I as a Shadow. And here it is. I feel that I am a shadow, an opaque reflection of others passing by, unsubstantiated, no control over my own movements, pushed along by other bipeds who happen to be in the sun. My shape is as variable as the form with which I'm in conjunction. And on dark or cloudy days, I feel as if I don't exist. Colorless, stretched out of shape, dry. My form is crisscrossed by other shadows who take no notice of me, meshing, overlapping, with the appearance of touching, but really never really. And no matter how I twist and contract myself to be apparent, to show details of face, its shading and hues, I'm still walked on, stepped over, taken for granted. But how can I ever be confirmed, touched, or known as I lie upon the street? or climb onto the sides of buildings. My greatest agony is in dimly lit rooms where I go unnoticed, even to myself. That's the worst. Yet I can't help but feel that at the bottom of my feet, I'm in contact with something real, the real substance of me, full-bodied and warm, knowing the light directly and reflecting it back to other strollers and passers-by. So difficult reaching through and beyond the shadowed me, for though it is only black on white, it's the only me I know, and it is agony to let it go. So I will either wait for sunny days in order to feel that I am, or one day let go of the effect of I am, my shadow, and begin my climb to the top, at the base of realness, the souls of substance, and wend my way to the light.
I like those images. They're nice.
So that,
I realize sometimes it's like to take, you know, I listen to that poem and I realize to move from an idea of self to the actuality of self, which is no self. It's to take self-interest and turn it into no self-interest. To really get all your needs met in that state is a big, big challenge.
Long, 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 long way to go for most of us, you know, because at this stage of life, and for most of us, it's all about just meeting that those basic needs. I'm reminded of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, self, and belonging, and et cetera, et cetera. And these kind of questions that we're pursuing probably don't feel really relevant to most people.
But it's relevant if you're hurt. You know, if you're hurting and if you're emotionally hurting. You know, it seems to me that to truly grow, and the whole this program is aimed for those people who are at least asking the questions about, like, is there more, or am I more than just this bundle of feelings and
conscious dirt.
Conscious dirt. Everyone calls us conscious dirt. I like to think that we're more than conscious dirt, even at this level of evolution. But that we ask, we begin to ask questions about who we are and why we're here and what's our purpose. And when you start asking those questions, I hope that this can, well, resonate with you, you know, because we ask those questions. That's something we do. The two of us, individually and together, we ask these questions about why we're, what we are, and why we're here, and where we're going.
And how far will self-interest get you? So, how would you begin to know, like, there's a certain point where you've pushed yourself as far as you can go, and at what point does it stop? And I think it really doesn't stop until we've been, I want to say, invaded by love, where love really comes in and takes us over, and where we're given assurance. And that's where, to me, spiritual connection, or connecting with the base of all being, ground of being, as a theologian Paul Tillich called God, the ground of being. And in that moment, we are liberated from the confines of just our own corporeal, mental, emotional self as we've known it, and we can begin to stretch into something that, while it includes the self, is an ever-expanding sense that that self is, well, moving out and out and out and out, which is what we think of when we say ever-expanding.
Yes. I wonder how many of us truly are connected to our own expansiveness. You know, for me, I once was with a friend and we were talking about growing, and he said, you know, this spiritual doesn't have gone any place, you know, like all these truths that he reads and discusses and everything doesn't seem to have invaded his everyday activities. And I said to him, in that moment I had an awareness that, no, it may not, but our recovery from the state of delusionalness to awareness gets shorter. So we recover quicker, you know, and you go, oh, yeah, I just fell into a fear trap. I just fell into a delusional moment, you know, and that's all it is, and I can get out of it because I'm no longer there just by recognizing that I'm in it.
And you end up back as a new and improved this moment, and sure enough.
That's right.
It is new and improved because you're bringing more to the moment. That's what makes it improve, is that you have gone out, have these experiences, like the prodigal son that we are, and you've come back, but you brought all that to it, and if you can translate all that delusional experiences, that was your accumulated story, and find a way to kind of make it into art. I think that's what art does. Art is a way of taking all the impressions that life has and brings to us and put them in such a way that they'll fit inside this moment.
I think what art tries to do is freeze moments, you know, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. It's wonderful. It's our hieroglyphics. It's our way of leaving something behind. I mean, because art can be left behind, you know, like that. I went to this tribute last night to Pete Seeger, who had just recently died at 94 years old, and all these people were talking about him, and singing the songs that he made popular and some of which he wrote. And you realize in that moment that he may be gone, but that which he created and shared with the world will last a lot longer than he lasted. And he lasted 94 years. So that was very inspiring, to say the least.
So we are Errol and Rochelle Strider. We're here at Insight Out, The Naked Truth. We're being wonderfully sponsored by Glow Raw, Real Life Food. And we're looking at the issue of how far will self-interest get you? So it'll get you like the things you need, maybe, if you're good at it. It'll get you some of the things that you want. It'll get you places that you may want to go. But sometimes when we face problems that are just seemingly unsolvable or can't be resolved, and we've been using self-interest to try and get there, we've had some success, and we come into having some failure. And what is there beyond self-interest that might help us bridge that chasm between, well, we're getting a phone call, so it could be the answer. We're not going to get it, but we're broadcasting from the office here at Lupin Lodge, which is where we are, which is beautiful, 110 acres, and we invite you to come out and join us. And like we say, clothing is optional. Sometimes people immediately think that means you have to be nude. No, it means clothing is optional.
Except in the pool and the hot tub. On the sauna. Yeah. And I always tell people to shower, but I don't know anybody who's ever worn their clothes in the shower.
Well, no, that's the thing, except in those places where you actually have to wear clothes.
Huh? Well, you got me on that one. You turned my head around on that thing.
Well, that's part of what this process is that we call our show, which is about turning our heads around and kind of stopping us in our tracks. And part of our purpose is that We kind of break into consciousness, because so much of it is habitual, so much of it is an unexamined life is a life that's not well lived or something like that.
An unexamined life, right. Yeah, those are the moments that you start becoming wise, when you start asking why.
Yeah, or like, why is it my self-interest modus operandus working in this particular area? Like, I don't have the partner that I want, or why is the partner that I'm having such a unlikable person, or why don't I have the money or the job, or what's keeping me back? And there's all that self-interest driving us. And, you know, it is a big part of that little brain inside there. What's that little reptilian brain called?
That's what it's called, the reptilian brain.
Yeah, that. You know, and I think it'll be interesting, should we transcend this life experience and don't bring that reptilian brain with us, because we may, I don't know how they repackage it, to see if what life would be like. So we're being told that we have like 2 minutes to go. So Rochelle, how would
you... Next week. I'm back next week because we're going to explore...
control. In fact, the name of the show is called The Thrill of Control because they've got a new sport in the Winter Olympics called control, icy control versus snowy control.
No. But control issues are something people spend a lot of time on. So we're going to have fun this bit.
Right, and that fits right into where we've come tonight. You know, how far will self-interest get you? And one of the ways through which self-interest operates is through trying to achieve or have or maintain or get control.
So we say goodnight?
Well, we have, let's remind you, we're here at 7 o'clock Tuesday night Pacific time. And hopefully we'll have all the music and all the perks going for us. And we're sponsored by Go Raw. Thank you very much. We're broadcasting from Lupin Lodge. Come visit us, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked.
Good night.
Hopefully we'll see you next week. Good night.